I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Western weapons. The U.S. says it's considering a request regarding Ukraine's targeting of sites further inside Russia. We're at the White House. Government shutdown? Lawmakers debate the next steps after budget talks stall on Capitol Hill. A familiar ring to it, promising new developments in the renovations to Notre Dame Cathedral in France. Plus, she's watching over us. A report from Ecuador on a statue with major significance. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of the Most Holy Name of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Our top story tonight, the Biden administration may be growing more receptive to allowing the Ukrainians to use their arms to hit targets further inside of Russia. Western leaders have so far balked at Ukraine's request, fearing that if granted, it could escalate the war. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. And tomorrow at the White House, President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer will sit down together for a bilateral meeting. Plenty on their plate, including easing restrictions on where Western weapons can be used.
In northeastern Ukraine, Russia attacks energy facilities and civilian infrastructure. At least 13 people hurt. Russia firing missile and drone barrages at Ukraine just about every day since the war began over 2.5 years ago. At a joint news conference in Warsaw with his Polish counterpart, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken discusses the current battlefield situation and what Ukraine needs right now.
As we go forward, we will do exactly what we have already done, which is we will adjust, we'll adapt as necessary, including with regard to the means that are at Ukraine's disposal to effectively defend against the Russian aggression.
The secretary wrapping up a three-nation, Ukraine-focused European tour, stressing united and unwavering support for Ukraine as it battles Russia.
And we saw at the NATO summit just a few months ago the extraordinary progress the alliance has made in countries stepping up and dedicating the necessary resources to defense.
In addition to military support for Ukraine, NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg believes it's critical to communicate long-term commitment, saying Russian President Vladimir Putin thinks time is on his side.
Because now President Putin, I'm afraid that he believes that he can wait us out. And as long as he believes that he can wait us out, the war will continue.
Meanwhile, just months from now, a new U.S. president, whoever it may be, will have to figure out how to handle the ongoing conflict.
They sent her to negotiate peace before this war started. 3 days later, he went in and he started the war.
If Donald Trump were president, Putin would be sitting in Kyiv right now.
Also new tonight on the campaign trail, former President Donald Trump says he will not debate Vice President Kamala Harris again. He says she, quote, should focus on what she should have done during the last almost 4-year period, end quote. At the same time, Harris says she believes, quote, we owe it to the voters to have another debate. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Officials in Hungary say they are exploring ways to be reimbursed by the European Union for funds it spent on border protection. The move could deepen a conflict with the EU over Hungary's immigration and asylum policies. The Central European nation has been fined around $220 million for breaking EU rules on asylum. Over the summer, a court ruled Hungary must pay around $1 million per day until it brings its policies into line with EU law. All right, now to the Middle East, where the United Nations says the Palestinian economy is in a free fall.
Gaza's GDP has dropped by an alarming 81% in the last quarter of 2023 alone. This has led to a 22% contraction in GDP for the entire year.
The report cites a rapid and alarming economic decline in the West Bank due to Israeli settlements and destruction of buildings. This comes as Israel presses forward with operations in the West Bank. The military says that it is working to target and dismantle militant groups. And now we go to Vietnam, where Typhoon Yagi has taken the lives of nearly 200 people and more than 125 others are still missing.
Oh.
Well, the tragedies come amid heavy flooding and landslides. People are walking in muddy brown water up to their knees in order to collect food and other supplies. Meantime, electricity and water have been cut off. Officials say this is the strongest typhoon in two decades. And back here in the United States, Louisiana is dealing with widespread power outages and massive flooding today. This as Francine has weakened to a tropical depression. The storm originally struck the state as a Category 2 hurricane, bringing winds of up to 100 miles per hour and wreaking havoc in its wake, including leaving more than 300,000 people in the dark. The governor says the National Guard is assisting residents and conducting search and rescue operations. And joining us now is Deacon Martin Gutierrez, Vice President of Mission and Community Engagement at Catholic Charities of New Orleans. Deacon Martin, good to be with you. And our prayers are with all of you in New Orleans and the others that are in the path of this storm. Can you tell us what you have seen and experienced so far from Francine?
As a matter of fact, we are grateful. Things could have been a lot worse. It is much, much, much better than we expected. We just finished a coordination call with the other diocese in the state of Louisiana. And yes, there has been some damage, but not as much as we expected. This was a fast-moving hurricane, which dumped a lot of rain on the southern east part of the state, but moved on very quickly. So we are in the process of assessing the damage and the needs and how we're going to respond in the next few days.
Yeah, so good to hear it wasn't as bad as anticipated. What are you anticipating will be the needs of the residents and those needing your help?
As you mentioned, the biggest need right now is electricity. Power is out. Over 200,000 people in the area are out of power. So that's going to be the biggest need at this moment. There is some flooding that we're going to have to deal with. So the regular things that normally are needed, tarps, cleaning supplies, monetary donations are always good. You know, that helps us to get the resources quickly in the hands that are needed.
Yeah. Deacon, I know you're no stranger to natural disasters down there in Louisiana and assisting those. What kind of needs do you assist with? If you can just give us a sense of that, how do you help people in Louisiana in times like this?
So we have seven dioceses here in Louisiana, and each one of them has its own strengths and weaknesses. Some are very good at responding right away and being part of the first responders team of groups that go out there and respond right away. In our case in New Orleans, we are here for the long term. We just had Hurricane Ida about 3 years ago, and we're still providing case management services to them. So we do everything in Louisiana from search and rescue, getting involved in those areas. Some of the dioceses and other parts of the state do that, and others do the long-term case management that we are good at here in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's very, very important work that you all do. Talk to us also about the importance of faith during times like this, especially where you are, where there's a lot of natural disasters.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we have gotten very good at responding to disasters, whether it's hurricanes, tornadoes, even oil spills, as you may remember. So, you know, houses, they come and go, literally. But our faith is strong, and we stand on our faith, and God has been good, and He's proven to be good again this past 24 hours.
Yeah, that is wonderful. For those that are watching right now and wondering how they can help, how can they help?
The best way to do this is through CatholicCharitiesUSA.org. The National Office of Catholic Charities works together with all the different dioceses in the country that have a Catholic Charities agency. And we work together with them. Like I said, just an hour ago, I was on the phone with the other seven dioceses here in Louisiana and with representatives from CCUSA.
All right. Deacon Martin, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about all of this. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you, too.
House Republicans closed out their work week empty-handed. Speaker Mike Johnson yanked his six-month government funding bill just hours before a vote. And now House GOP leaders have some serious decisions to make about how they plan to avoid a government shutdown at the end of the month. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest.
Good evening, Tracy. Pulling the resolution was an embarrassment for Speaker Mike Johnson. He was hoping to get the funding bills passed before lawmakers left town this week, but about a dozen Republicans signaled that they wouldn't be supporting it. And now he's back at square one.
We're having thoughtful conversations, family conversations within the Republican conference, and I believe we'll get there. So people have concerns about all sorts of things. That's how the process works, and sometimes it takes a little more time.
Despite the setback, the speaker believes that he can get the government funded and still include the SAVE Act, a provision that would prevent illegal migrants from registering to vote in federal elections. If not, what are his options? One, he could drop the SAVE Act and pass a clean continuing resolution to fund the government for 6 months. Two, he could try for a shorter funding bill till December that includes the SAVE Act. Or three, he could keep it the way it is and try to add some items that would attract yes votes from Republicans.
February-March is a minimum, and the SAVE Act has got to be in there. That shouldn't even be a question.
I mean, I would say that we should probably do a CR and then reevaluate in probably January timeframe. So I think that that would probably be the best solution, but only with the condition that SAVE Act is attached. If it's not, no go.
Democrats say with only 2 weeks to go until the government runs out of money, GOP leadership should not allow a shutdown to occur.
But this is what Trump does, and then the leadership over there sides with him far too often, and it's chaos.
We are simply asking traditional Republicans to partner with House Democrats in a bipartisan way to find the common ground necessary to avoid a Donald Trump-inspired extreme MAGA Republican shutdown.
Speaker Johnson says he hopes the continuing resolution will be on the floor next week. Over in the Senate, it's no better. Lawmakers still need to pass these spending bills, the Farm Bill, and the annual National Defense Authorization Act to fund the Department of Defense. A lot needs to get done with little time to do it. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the New York City Police Commissioner has resigned. The move by Edward Caban comes 1 week after his phone was seized as part of a federal investigation into several close advisors of the city's mayor. The reason for the probe remains unclear. Democrat Eric Adams says a retired FBI official will serve as the interim police chief. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including mission accomplished, a new milestone for space exploration. We have the latest.
SpaceX. Back at home, we all have a lot of work to do, but from here, Earth sure looks like a perfect world.
And the voice you just heard there is tech entrepreneur Jared Isaacman as he made history. He is the first private citizen to complete a spacewalk. Jared Isaacman is part of a four-person crew aboard the SpaceX Crew Dragon vehicle, which left Earth on Tuesday. The Polaris Dawn mission is focused on testing SpaceX's new spacesuits. In total, the spacewalk lasted 20 minutes in what is being called both risky and a giant leap forward in space exploration. And for more on today's historic spacewalk, we go to Dr. Philip Metzger, director of the Stephen W. Hawking Center for Microgravity Research and professor of planetary science at the University of Central Florida. He also spent 30 years at NASA working on space flight technology. Welcome, Dr. Metzger. Great to be with you today. Can you put today's events into context as it relates to space exploration, both past and present?
Yeah, this is a really amazing day. Not only do we have the most humans in space ever in history at 19, but it was also the first time that we had a private spaceflight do a spacewalk. And it's gone farther from Earth than humans have gone ever since the Apollo program. In fact, the two female crew members are the farthest that women have traveled from planet Earth in the history of the world. So there are a lot of really cool things happening. I would like to say that NASA had envisioned a day like this. NASA started a program called Commercial Crew and trying to do sustainable space exploration by helping the commercial side of space get started. Because if commercial space can begin to flourish, then it allows NASA to do more and go farther. And so the plan is working just like we had hoped it would.
That is amazing. How does that make you feel? I mean, you've been working on this type of thing for such a long time, and to see it actually happen.
Yeah, well, this is really the most exciting time for me as a space professional. I grew up on the Space Coast in Florida. I've worked at NASA ever since I was a graduate right out of college. and then working as a faculty member in planetary science and space technology. So it's been about 40 years so far. And by far, this is the most exciting time in space. We're going to have the fifth flight of the Starship, which is going to eventually be a lunar lander. That'll be supposed to be taking off in a month or two from now. They're going to catch the rocket on the spacecraft using chopsticks as it attempts to come back and land. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have the new Glenn rocket from Blue Origin flying for the first time. There are just so many things happening. Going back to the moon, Mars exploration, SpaceX wants to build a city on Mars of 1 million people within a few decades. We have commercial space companies getting ready to put up their own space stations, multiple companies building lunar landers. So it is an amazing time.
Yeah, it really is. And also, though, it's also a little bit dangerous to do this. Talk to us quickly about why spacewalks are considered risky.
Yeah, so when you open that door and let all the air out of your spacecraft, you better hope you can get it shut again and get the air repressurized, because if you don't, you've only got the little bit of air in your suit and you've got to come back down and land pretty quickly. When you're exposed out there in space, if you got a rip or a tear in your spacesuit, you would lose pressure and it would be almost instantaneous death for the crew. So it is quite a scary thing, but they've got these high-tech spacesuits that they've been developing. One unique thing about these spacesuits is they are developed to be mass manufactured, to be really inexpensive so that they can build thousands of them, because we're expecting to have thousands and then tens of thousands of people going to space pretty soon.
Oh, really incredible stuff. We only have maybe about 30 seconds left or so, but I would love to get your final thoughts on all of this.
Yeah, well, this was a great triumphant day for SpaceX. It's a great day for commercial space. I'm expecting the space economy to grow, be a $1 trillion economy within 5 or 10 years, well, about 10 years. I think we're right on schedule for that.
All right. Dr. Metzger, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, elevated status, a report from Quito on an amazing statue dedicated to Our Lady, plus an update from Notre Dame Cathedral that could make some noise. In North Dakota strikes down the state's near total ban on abortion. He says the state constitution creates a fundamental right to abortion before a baby is viable. The district judge also said the pro-life law is, quote, too vague. The Diocese of Buffalo announces its final list of parish mergers and closures. A total of 118 worship sites remain open. That is down from the current 196 parishes and secondary worship sites. The move comes amid shrinking budgets and declining church attendance. Pope Francis is in Singapore, the final leg of his 12-day apostolic journey. Today, he celebrated Mass before thousands of people, both from the Southeast Asian nation and surrounding countries. EWTN Rome correspondent Courtney Marez is in Singapore and has this report.
We are almost at the end of Pope Francis's apostolic journey to Southeast Asia. Yesterday, Pope Francis flew from East Timor, one of the poorest countries in Southeast Asia, to Singapore, an Asian financial hub with a higher GDP per capita than the United States. After the official welcome, Pope Francis met privately with local members of the Jesuit order. Today, Pope Francis met with Singapore's Prime Minister Lawrence Wong and addressed government authorities at the National University of Singapore.
Membri del corpo diplomatico.
In his speech, Pope Francis praised Singapore's entrepreneurial spirit, high quality of education, and efficient healthcare system. But the Pope underlined the importance of protecting the dignity of the many migrant workers in the country. The Pope also warned that the current social conditions can weaken the role of the family, which he said must be strengthened and supported. 50,000 Catholics were present for Mass today with Pope Francis in Singapore's National Stadium. Among those in the crowd, Cardinal Stephen Chow and a delegation of Catholics from Hong Kong. I also spoke with Catholics from the Philippines and Vietnam who expressed hope that Pope Francis will also visit their countries sometime soon. In his homily, Pope Francis spoke about the great and bold architecture that makes the city so famous, using it to reflect on how it is love that builds up society and love which provides a solid foundation. After the Mass, Pope Francis returned to the St. Francis Xavier Retreat Center, where he's staying for this leg of the trip. Tomorrow, Pope Francis will visit the sick and the elderly and participate in an interfaith meeting with representatives of Eastern religions before making the long journey back to Rome. In Singapore, Courtney Mares, EWTN News.
The most famous and important statue in Ecuador is a depiction of Our Lady, the Virgin of Quito, also known as the Virgin of the Panecillo, is both a place of prayer and a tourist destination. And with the International Eucharistic Congress in town, it is more popular than ever. Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, Matthew Bunsen, has more.
So, 41 meters tall, an estimated weight of 124,000 kilograms of aluminum, the Panecillo Virgin statue stands guard over the city of Quito at 3,000 meters high. It is the tallest statue in Ecuador and one of the tallest in South America. Inaugurated in 1975 by Pablo Muñoz Vega, the then Archbishop of Quito, it's unique as a statue of the Blessed Mother as it depicts her with the wings of an angel. The open wing of the Virgin measures 90 square meters, and the crown is composed of 12 stars representing the 12 apostles. Every day, hundreds of people climb Panecillo Hill to pay their tribute to the statue and to admire the city from above.
As an Ecuadorian and Quiteño, we are very proud to be represented by this type of monument, since within the city almost 70% of people are Catholic. So being such an ancient center of South America and having the oldest churches and monuments in the world, having the Virgin of Quito, the winged Virgin for us, is something that enhances the value of the Catholic Church in Ecuador, especially now that it has become a very important point of interest for the visit of the Eucharistic Congress.
Created in 1975 by the Spaniard Agustín de la Herrán Matorras, the statue was based on the Virgin of La Garda, an 18th century work by Bernardo de la Garda, one of the most important representatives of the Quito school. The sculpture depicts the Virgin Mary as she is described in the biblical book of Revelation, a woman with wings and a chain that holds a serpent under her feet. This is why, in addition to the names of Virgin of Quito or Virgin of La Garda, this statue is also called Virgin of the Apocalypse. On the occasion of the International Eucharistic Congress in Quito, the statue of the Virgin has become even more a place of pilgrimage and hope, especially for the citizens of Ecuador who see this event as an opportunity to foster faith, especially in the youth.
I am 28 years old, but I have always been marked by the presence of the Virgin. This specific place, the Panecillo, the Virgin, have always been very important for me. I think it is very important to pass the faith from an early age. I have a one-year-old son, and my hope is that he will have faith that God loves him, that God accepts him, that the Virgin will always be with him.
As a vestige of the Inca era, in this area we also find La Olla del Panecillo, which is a kind of circular cistern 8 meters deep that was filled with rainwater that was used to irrigate the crops in the area. In colonial times, the water collected here was used to irrigate the gardens of the Bella Vista mansion and was later used as a defense site for the colonial troops during the liberation battle of Pichincha in 1822. History, tradition, and faith are bound together in this unique place in the Quito sky. In Quito, for EWTN News Nightly, I'm Matthew Bunsen.
Beautiful. And finally tonight, one of the world's most well-known cathedrals is ready to ring in a new era. Church bells are returning to Notre Dame Cathedral just ahead of its scheduled reopening in December. The bells will be blessed in a special ceremony inside the cathedral before being hoisted into the Twin Towers. The cathedral is scheduled to reopen on December 8th, more than 5 years after a devastating fire. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.